down here and don't touch anything.
What are you looking for upstairs?
Clown wanted to know, following me up the stairs.
I bet you're looking for clues that'll lead you to Evelyn and Annie. You know where I'd look? I'd look.
I whirled around, almost knocking him off his feet. Down, I said, pointing stiff-armed, shouting at him nose to nose. Go sit on the couch and don't get up until I tell you.
Yeesh, he said. You don't have to yell at me. Just tell me, okay? Boy, it must be one of those days for you, huh?
I narrowed my eyes. One of what days?
You know.
It is not one of those days, I said.
Yeah, she's like this on a good day, Lula said. You don't want to know what she's like on one of those days.
I left Lula and Clown downstairs, and I poked through the bedrooms on my own. There were still clothes hanging in the closets and folded in dresser drawers. Evelyn must have only taken essentials. Either her disappearance was temporary, or else she was in a rush to leave. Maybe both. As far as I could tell, there was no sign of Stephen. Evelyn had sanitized the house of him. There were no leftover men's toiletries in the bathroom. No forgotten men's belts lurking in the closet. No family photo in a silver frame. I'd done a similar house cleaning when I'd divorced Dickie. Still, for months after our breakup, I'd get bushwhacked by an overlooked item. A man's sock that had dropped behind the washing machine. A set of car keys that had gotten kicked under the couch and been given up for lost. The medicine chest contained the usual. A bottle of Tylenol, a bottle of kids' cough syrup, dental floss, nail scissors, mouthwash, box of Band-Aids, talcum powder. No uppers or downers, no hallucinogens, no happy pills. Also, conspicuously missing was anything alcoholic. No wine or gin stashed in kitchen cupboards, no beer in the fridge. Could be Carol was mistaken about the booze and pills, or could be Evelyn took it all with her. Clown popped his head around the bathroom door jamb.
You don't mind if I look too, do you?
Yes, I mind. I told you to stay on the couch. And what's Lula doing? She was supposed to keep her eye on you.
Lula's doing watch out. That doesn't take two people, so I decided to help you search. Did you already look in Annie's room? I just looked in there and I didn't find any clues, but her drawings were real scary. Did you look at her drawings? I'm telling you, that's a messed up kid. It's television. All that violence.
The only picture I saw was of a red and green house.
Did the red look like blood?
No, it looked like windows.
Uh-oh,
Lula said from the front room. Damn, I hate uh-oh.
What?
I yelled down at her.
There's a car pulled up behind your CRV.
I peeked out Evelyn's bedroom window. It was a black Lincoln Town car. Two guys got out and started walking toward Evelyn's front door. I grabbed Clown's hand and pulled him down the stairs after me. Don't panic, I thought. The door's locked and they can't see in. I made a sign for everyone to be quiet, and we all stood still as statues, barely breathing, while one of the men rapped on the door.
Nobody home, he said.
I carefully exhaled. They'd leave now, right? Wrong. There was the sound of a key being inserted in the lock. The lock clicked, and the door swung open. Lula and Clown lined up behind me. The two men stood their ground on the front porch. Yes? I asked, trying to look like I belonged to the house. The men were late 40s, early 50s, medium height, built solid, dressed in business suits, both Caucasian. Didn't look especially happy to see the Three Stooges in Evelyn's house.
We're looking for Evelyn,
one of the men said. Not here, I told him. And you would be...
Eddie Abruzzi. And this is my associate, Melvin Darrow.
Chapter 3. Oh boy, Eddie Abruzzi. Talk about a day going into the toilet.
It's been brought to my attention that Evelyn moved out, Abruzzi said. You wouldn't happen to know where she is, would you?
No, I said. But as you can see, she hasn't moved out. Abruzzi looked around.
Her furniture's here. That doesn't mean she hasn't moved out.
Well, technically,
Clown said. Abruzzi squinted at Clown.
Who are you?
I'm Albert Clown. I'm Evelyn's lawyer.
This got a smile out of Abruzzi.
Evelyn hired a clown for a lawyer. Perfect.
K-L-O-U-G-H-N,
Albert Clown said. And I'm Stephanie Plum, I said.
I know who you are, Abruzzi said.
His voice was eerily quiet, and his pupils were shrunk to the size of pinpricks.
You killed Benito Ramirez.
Benito Ramirez was a heavyweight boxer who tried to kill me on several occasions, and finally was shot on my fire escape, poised to break through my window. He was criminally insane and flat-out evil, taking pleasure in finding strength through other people's pain.
I owned Ramirez, Abruzzi said. I had a lot of time and money invested in him. And I understood him. We enjoyed many of the same pursuits.
I didn't kill him, I said. You know that, don't you?
You didn't pull the trigger, but you killed him all the same.
He turned his attention to Lula.
I know who you are, too. You're one of Benito's whores. How did it feel to spend time with Benito? Did you enjoy it? Did you feel privileged? Did you learn anything?
I don't feel so good, Lula said,
and she fainted dead away, crashing into Clown, taking him down with her. Lula had been brutalized by Ramirez. He'd tortured her and left her for dead. But Lula hadn't died. Turns out, it's not so easy to kill Lula. Unlike Clown, who looked like he might be ready to cash in his chips any minute. Clown was squashed under Lula with only his feet showing, doing a good imitation of the Wicked Witch of the East when Dorothy's house fell on her. He made a sound that was half squeak, half death rattle.
Help!
He whispered.
He can't breathe.
Darrow grabbed one of Lula's legs, and I grabbed an arm, and we rolled Lula off Clown. Clown lay there for a moment, eyes glazed, breath shallow.
Does anything look broken? He asked. Did I mess myself?
What are you doing here? Abruzzi asked. And how did you get in?
We came to visit Evelyn, I said. The back door was open.
You and your fat whore friend always wear rubber gloves?
Lula opened an eye.
Who you call him fat?
She opened the other eye.
What happened? What am I doing on the floor?
You fainted, I told her.
That's a lie, she said, getting to her feet. I don't faint. I never fainted once in my life.
She looked over at Clown, who was still on his back.
What's with him?
You landed on him.
Squash me like a bug, Clown said, struggling to stand. I'm lucky I'm alive.
Abruzzi considered us all for a moment.
This is my property, he said. Don't break in again. I don't care if you're friends of the family or lawyers or murdering bitches. Got that?
I pressed my lips tight together and said nothing. Lula shifted her weight foot to foot.
Huh,
she said. And Clown vigorously nodded his head.
Yes, sir, he said. We understand. No problemo. We only came in this time on account of...
Lula gave him a kick in the back of his calf.
Yo!
Clown said, bending at the waist, grabbing his leg.
Get out of this house, Abruzzi said to me. And don't return.
I've been employed by Evelyn's family to look after her interests. That includes stopping by here from time to time.
You're not listening, Abruzzi said. I'm telling you to stay out. Stay out of this house and stay out of Evelyn's affairs.
Bells and whistles were going off in my head. Why did Abruzzi care about Evelyn and her house? He was her landlord. My understanding of his business was that this wasn't even an important piece of real estate to him. And if I don't?
I'll make your life very unpleasant. I know how to make women uncomfortable. Benito and I had that in common. We knew how to make women pay attention. Tell me,
Abruzzi said,
what were Benito's last moments like? Was he in pain? Was he afraid? Did he know he was going to die?
I don't know, I said. He was on the other side of the glass. I don't know what he was feeling, aside from insane rage. Abruzzi stared at me for a moment.
Fate is a funny thing, isn't it? Here you are, back in my life. And you're, once again, on the wrong side. It will be interesting to see how this campaign unfolds.
Campaign?
I'm a student of military history, and this is, to some extent, a war.
He made a small hand gesture.
Maybe not a war. More of a skirmish, I think. Whatever we call it, it's a contest of sorts. Because I'm feeling generous today, I'll give you an option. You can walk away from Evelyn in this house, and I'll let you go. You'll have bought amnesty. If you continue to participate, I'll consider you to be enemy troops, and a war game will begin.
Oh boy, this guy is a total fruitcake. I held my hand up in a stop gesture. I'm not playing war games. I'm just a friend of the family checking on things for Evelyn. We're going now. And I think you should do the same. And I think you should take a pill. A big pill. I ushered Lula and Clown past Abruzzi and Darrow and through the door. I hustled them into the car, and we took off.
Holy crap, Lula said. What was that? I'm totally creeped out. Eddie Abruzzi has eyes like Ramirez, and Ramirez had no soul. I thought I put all that behind me, but I looked into those eyes just now, and everything went black. It was like being with Ramirez all over again. I'm telling you, I'm freaked. I got the sweats. I'm hyperventilating is what I'm doing. I need a burger. No, wait a minute. I just had a burger. I need something else. I need to go shopping. I need shoes.
Clown's eyes brightened.
So, Ramirez and Abruzzi are bad guys, right? And Ramirez is dead, right? What was he, a professional killer?
He was a professional boxer.
Holy cow! That Ramirez! I remember reading about him in the paper. Holy cow! You're the one who killed Benito Ramirez!
I didn't kill him, I said. He was on my fire escape trying to break in, and someone else shot him.
Yeah, she almost never shoots anyone, Lula said. And I don't care anyway. I'm getting out of here. I need mall air. I could breathe better if I had mall air.
I took Clown back to the laundromat and dropped Lula at the office. Lula roared off in her red Trans Am, and I went in to visit with Connie.
You know that guy you picked up yesterday?
Connie said to me.
Martin Paulson? He's back on the street. There was something wrong with his original arrest, and the case has been dismissed.
He should be locked up just for living.
Apparently, when he was released, his first words as a freed man were some unflattering references to you.
Great. I slouched onto the couch. Did you know Eddie Abruzzi owned Benito Ramirez? We ran into him at Evelyn's house. And speaking of Evelyn's house, she has a broken window that we need to repair. It's in the back.
It was a kid with a baseball, right?
Connie said.
And after you saw him break the window, he ran away and you don't know who he is. Wait, even better, you never saw him. You got there and the window was broken.
On the nose. So, what do you know about Abruzzi? Connie punched the name into her computer. In less than a minute, information started coming in. Home address, previous address, work history, wives, children, arrest history. She printed it out and handed it over to me.
We can find out his toothpaste brand and the size of his right nut, but it'll take a little longer.
Tempting, but I don't think I need to know his nut size just yet.
I bet they're big.
I clapped my hands over my ears. I'm not listening. I looked sideways at Connie. What else do you know about him?
I don't know much. Just that he owns a bunch of real estate in the Berg and downtown. I've heard he's not a nice guy, but I don't know any details. A while back, he was arrested on a minor racketeering charge. The charge was dropped due to lack of live witnesses. What do you want to know about Abruzzi?
Connie asked. Morbid curiosity?
I got two skips in today. Laura Manello got picked up for shoplifting a couple weeks ago and was a no-show for her court appearance yesterday.
What did she shoplift?
A brand new BMW. Red. Took it right off the lot in broad daylight.
Test drive?
Yeah, only she didn't tell anyone she was taking it, and she tested it for 4 days before they caught her.
You've got to respect a woman with that kind of initiative. Connie passed me two files.
The second failure to appear is Andy Bender. He's a repeat for domestic violence. I think you might have picked him up on a previous charge. He's probably home drunk as a skunk without a clue if it's Monday or Friday.
I flipped through Bender's file. Connie was right. I'd tangled with him before. He was a scrawny wastoid of a man. And he was a nasty drunk. This is the guy who came after me with a chainsaw, I said.
Yes, but look on the bright side, Connie said. He didn't have a gun.
I tucked the two files into my bag. Maybe you could run Evelyn Soder through the computer and see if you could pull out her innermost secrets.
Innermost secrets is a 48-hour search.
Put it on my tab. I have to take off. I need to talk to the wizard.
The wizard hasn't been answering his page, Connie said. Tell him to call me.
The wizard is Ranger. He's the wizard because he's magic. He mysteriously passes through locked doors. He seems to read minds. He's able to refuse dessert. And he can give me a hot flash with the touch of a fingertip. I had mixed feelings about calling him. We were currently in a strange place, filled with double entendre and unresolved sexual tension. But we were also partners of sorts, and he had contacts I'd never have. The Annie search would go much faster if I brought Ranger in. I got into my car and dialed Ranger on my cell phone. I left a message on his machine and read through Bender's file. Didn't sound like much new had happened since I last saw Andy Bender. He was still unemployed, he was still beating on his wife, and he still lived in the projects on the other side of town. It wasn't going to be hard to find Bender. The hard part was going to be wrestling him into the CRV. Hey, I thought, no sense being negative right from the start. Look on the bright side, right? Be a cup-is-half-full person. Maybe Mr. Bender will be sorry he missed his court date. Maybe he'll be happy to see me. Maybe he won't have any gas in his chainsaw. I put the car in gear and headed across town. It was a pleasant afternoon, and the projects looked habitable. There was a hopefulness to the dirt front yards that suggested perhaps this year some grass might grow. Perhaps the junkers at the curb would stop leaking oil. Perhaps a lotto ticket would pay out big. But then again, perhaps not. I parked in front of Bender's unit and watched for a while. For lack of a better word, this part of the complex would be described as garden apartments. Bender lived on the ground floor. He had a battered wife and, thankfully, no kids. An open-air bazaar of sorts was operating a short distance away. The bazaar consisted of two cars, an old caddy and a new Oldsmobile. The owners had parked the cars at the curb and were selling handbags, T-shirts, DVDs, and God knows what else from their trunks. A few people milled around the cars. I rooted around in my bag and found a purse-sized cylinder of pepper spray. I shook it to make sure it was active and stuffed it into my pants pocket for easy access. I took a pair of cuffs out of the glove compartment and slipped them into the back of my jeans under the waistband. Okay, now I was all dressed up like a bounty hunter. I walked to Bender's door, took a deep breath, and knocked. The door opened, and Bender looked out at me.
What?
Andy Bender? He leaned forward and squinted.
Do I know you?
Get right to it, I thought, reaching behind my back for the cuffs. Move fast and catch him by surprise. Stephanie Plum, I said, whipping the cuffs out, clapping one on his left wrist. Bond enforcement. We need to go to the station and reschedule your court date. I put my hand to his shoulder and spun him around so I could cuff his right wrist.
"Hey, hold on here," he said, jerking away. "What the hell is this? I'm not going nowhere."
He took a swing at me, lost his balance, and listed sideways, knocking into an end table. A lamp and an ashtray crashed to the floor. Bender looked at them, dumbfounded.
"You broke my lamp," he said.
His face got red, and his eyes narrowed.
"I don't like that you broke my lamp."
"I didn't break your lamp."
"I said you broke it. You hard of hearing?"
He picked the lamp up from the floor and threw it at me. I sidestepped, and the lamp sailed past me and hit the wall. I rammed my hand into my pocket, but Bender tackled me before I could grab hold of the spray. He was a couple inches taller than me, thin and wiry. He wasn't especially strong, but he was mean as a snake. And he was motivated by hate and beer. We scrabbled around on the floor for a while, kicking and scratching. He was trying to do damage, and I was trying to get clear, and neither of us was having much luck. The room was a mess of clutter with stacks of newspapers, dirty dishes, and empty beer cans. We were bumping into tables and chairs, dumping the dishes and cans on the floor, then rolling over it all. A floor lamp went down, followed by a pizza box. I managed to slither from his grasp and get to my feet. He lunged after me and came up with a 10-inch chef's knife. I suppose it had been buried in the garbage heap in his living room. I yelped and bolted. No time for the pepper spray. He was surprisingly fast, considering he was shit-faced drunk. I ran flat out up the street, and he ran close at my heels. I skidded to a stop when I got to the boosted goods market, putting the Cadillac between me and Bender while I caught my breath. One of the vendors approached me. "I got some nice t-shirts," he said. "Exactly like what you'd see at the Gap. Got 'em in all sizes." "Not interested," I said.
"Selling 'em for a good price."
Bender and I were doing a dance around the car. He'd move, then I'd move, then he'd move, then I'd move. Meanwhile, I was trying to get the pepper spray out of my pocket. Trouble was, my pants were tight, the spray was shoved to the bottom of my pocket, and my hands were sweating and shaking. There was a guy sitting on the Oldsmobile's hood.
"Andy," he called, "why are you going after this girl with a knife?"
"She ruined my lunch. I was just sitting down to eat my pizza, and she came and ruined it all."
"I can see that," the guy on the Oldsmobile said. "She got pizza all over her. Looks like she rolled in it."
There was a second guy sitting on the Olds.
"Kinky," he said.
"How about one of you guys giving me a hand here?" I said. "Get him to drop the knife. Call the police. Do something."
"Hey, Andy,"
one of the men said.
"She wants you to drop the knife."
"I'm gonna gut her like a fish," Bender said. "I'm gonna fillet her like a trout. No bitch just walks in and ruins my lunch."
The two guys on the Olds were smiling.
"Andy needs some anger management courses,"
one of them said. The t-shirt salesman was next to me.
"Yeah, and he don't know much about fishing either. That ain't no fillet knife."
I finally pried the pepper spray loose from my pocket. I shook it and aimed it at Bender. The three men mobilized into action, slamming the trunk shut, putting some distance between us.
"Hey, you want to watch which way the wind is blowing?" one of them said. "I don't need my sinuses cleaned, and I don't want my merchandise ruined either. I'm a businessman, you see what I'm saying? We got inventory here."
"That stuff doesn't scare me," Bender said, inching his way around the caddy, waving the knife at me. "I love it. Bring it on. I've had so much pepper spray, I got an addiction."
"What you got on your wrist?"
one of the men asked Bender.
"Looks like you got a bracelet on. You and the old lady doing S&M shit now?"
"Those are my cuffs," I said. "He's in violation of his bail bond agreement."
"Hey, I know you," one of the men said. "I remember seeing your picture in a paper. You burned down a funeral home and set your eyebrows on fire."
"It wasn't my fault." They were all smiling again.
"Didn't Andy go after you with a chainsaw last year? And all you got now is this puny, girly-sized pepper spray? Where's your gun? You're probably the only one in the whole project not got a gun.
Give me the keys, Bender said to the T-shirt guy. I'm getting out of here. This is turning into a real downer.
I'm not done selling.
Sell some other time.
Shit,
the guy said and flipped him the keys. Bender got into the Cadillac and roared away.
What was that?
I asked.
Why did you give him the keys?
The T-shirt guy shrugged.
It's his car.
He doesn't have a car listed on his bond agreement, I said.
Guess old Andy don't tell everything. Anyways, it's a recent acquisition.
Recent acquisition? Probably stole it last night along with the T-shirts.
You sure you don't want a T-shirt? We got more in the Oldsmobile,
the guy said. He opened the trunk and took a couple shirts out.
Look at this. This here's the V-neck model. Even got some spandex in it. You'd look fine in this shirt. Show off your boobies.
How much? I asked.
How much you got?
I shoved my hand back into my pocket and pulled out $2.
This here's your lucky day, the guy said. On account of this shirt is on sale for $2.
I gave him the $2, took the shirt, and trudged back to my CRV. There was a sleek black car parked just in front of mine. A man leaned against the car, watching me, smiling. Ranger. His black hair was pulled back from his face, tied into a ponytail. He was dressed in black cargo pants, black Bates boots, and a black T-shirt that stretched taut over muscles he'd acquired when he was in Special Forces.
Looks like you've been shopping, he said.
I tossed the shirt into the CRV.
I need some help.
Again?
A while ago, I'd asked Ranger to help me capture a guy named Eddie DeChooch. DeChooch had been accused of trafficking contraband cigarettes and had been causing all kinds of problems for me. Ranger, being of mercenary mentality, had quoted his price for assistance as a night of his choosing, spent together. The whole night. And he got to pick the night's activities. Not exactly a hardship, since I'm attracted to Ranger in a moth-to-the-flame sort of way. Still, the idea was scary. I mean, he's the wizard, right? I practically have an orgasm standing next to him. What would happen with actual penetration? My God, my entire vagina might go up in flames. Not to mention, I can't figure out if I'm still attached to Morelli. As it turns out, I'd needed Ranger for the takedown. And it had been an okay takedown, except for a couple small hitches, like DeChooch getting his ear shot off. Ranger had hauled DeChooch off to the lockdown prison ward of St. Francis Hospital, and I had retreated to my apartment and crawled into bed, not wanting to think too hard about the day's events. What happened after that is still vivid in my mind. At 1 o'clock, the lock tumbled on my front door, and I heard the security chain swing free. I knew a lot of people who could pick a lock. I only knew one man who could release a security chain from the outside. Ranger stepped into the doorway to my bedroom and knocked softly on the door jamb.
Are you awake?
I am now. You scared the hell out of me. You ever think about ringing a doorbell?
Didn't want to get you out of bed.
So what's going on? I asked. Is DeChooch okay?
Ranger removed his gun belt and dropped it on the floor.
DeChooch is fine. But we have unfinished business.
Unfinished business? Oh, my God, was he talking about his price for the takedown? The room whirled in front of my eyes, and I involuntarily clutched the sheet to my breast.
This is sort of sudden, I said. I mean, I didn't think it would be tonight. I didn't even know if it would be any night. I wasn't sure you were serious. Not that I'd go back on a deal, but, what I'm trying to say is...
Ranger raised an eyebrow.
That makes you nervous?
Yes.
Damn. He sat in the rocker in the corner. He slouched slightly, elbows on the arms of the chair, fingers steepled against each other.
Well?
I asked.
You can relax. I'm not here to collect on the deal.
I blinked.
You're not? Then why did you drop your gun belt?
I'm tired. I wanted to sit and the belt is uncomfortable.
Oh.
He smiled.
Disappointed?
No. Liar, liar, pants on fire. The smile widened. So, what's the unfinished business?
The hospital is holding the Chooch overnight. He'll be transferred out first thing tomorrow morning. Someone should be present during the transfer to make sure the paperwork is handled correctly.
And that would be me? Ranger looked at me over his steepled fingers.
That would be you.
You could have called with this information. He picked the gun belt off the floor and stood.
I could have, but it wouldn't have been as interesting.
He kissed me lightly on the lips and walked to the doorway. Hey, I said, about the deal. You were kidding, right? It was the second time I'd asked, and I got the same answer. A smile. And now here we were, weeks later. Ranger still hadn't collected his fee, and I was in the undesirable position of negotiating more assistance. Do you know about child custody bonds? I asked him. He inclined his head a fraction of an inch. This was the equivalent to intense nodding for Ranger.
Yes?
I'm looking for a mother and a little girl.
How old is a little girl?
7.
From the Berg?
Yes.
It's difficult to hide a 7-year-old,
Ranger said.
They peek out windows and stand in open doorways. If the child is in the Berg, word will get around. The Berg isn't good at keeping a secret.
I haven't heard anything. I have no leads. I have Connie running a computer check, but I won't get that back for a day or two.
Give me whatever information you have, and I'll ask around.
I looked past Ranger and saw the Cadillac in the distance cruising toward us. Bender was still behind the wheel. He slowed when he reached us, gave me the finger, and rolled away around the corner out of sight.
A friend of yours? Ranger asked.
I opened the driver's side door to the CRV. I'm supposed to be capturing him.
And?
Tomorrow.
I could help you with that, too. We could run a tab for you.
I sent him a grimace. Do you know Eddie Abruzzi? Ranger removed a slice of pepperoni from my hair and picked some crushed potato chip crumbs off my T-shirt.
Abruzzi's not a nice guy. You want to stay away from Abruzzi.
I was trying to ignore Ranger's hands on my chest. On the surface, it seemed like innocent grooming. In the pit of my stomach, it felt like sex. Stop fondling me, I said.
Maybe you should get used to it, considering what you owe me.
I'm trying to have a conversation here. The missing mother is renting a house owned by Abruzzi. I sort of ran into him this morning.
Let me guess. You rolled on his lunch?
I looked down at my shirt. No, lunch belongs to the guy who gave me the finger.
Where did you meet up with Abruzzi?
At the rental house. This is the weird thing. Abruzzi didn't want me in the house, and he didn't want me involved with Evelyn. I mean, what's it to him? This isn't even a significant property for him. And then he got really freaky about this being a military campaign and a war game.
Abruzzi makes his money primarily through loan sharking, Ranger said. Then he invested in legitimate ventures like real estate. His hobby is wargaming. Do you know what that is?
No.
A wargamer studies military strategy. When it first started, it was a bunch of guys in a room pushing toy soldiers around on a map on the table, like the board game Risk or Axis and Allies. Imaginary battles are constructed and fought. A lot of wargamers play by computer now. It's Dungeons and Dragons for adults. I'm told Abruzzi takes it seriously.
He's crazy.
That's the general consensus. Anything else? Ranger asked.
Nope. That's about it. Ranger angled into his car and drove away. So much for the part of my day where I actually tried to earn some money. I still had Laura Manello, Grand Theft Auto, but I was feeling discouraged and I didn't have any handcuffs. Probably I needed to get back to the kids' search anyway. If I went back to the house now, chances were good that Abruzzi wouldn't be there. He probably left in a huff after threatening me and went home to shove some toy soldiers around. I drove back to Key Street and parked in front of Carol Nadich's half of the house. I rang her bell and scraped some pizza cheese off my breast while I waited. Hey, Carol said, opening the door. Now what? Did Annie play with any kids in the neighborhood? Did she seem to have a best friend? Most of the kids on this street are older, and Annie stayed inside a lot. Is that pizza in your hair? I put my hand to my head and felt around. Any pepperoni? No, just cheese and tomato sauce. Well, I said, as long as there aren't any pepperonis. Hold on, Carol said. I remember Evelyn telling me that Annie had a new friend at school. Evelyn was worried about it because the little girl thought she was a horse. Mental head slap. My niece, Mary Alice. Sorry, I don't know the horse kid's name, Carol said. I left Carol and drove two blocks to my parents' house. It was mid-afternoon. School would be out, and Mary Alice and Angie would be in the kitchen eating cookies, getting grilled by my mother. One of my early lessons was that everything has a price. If you want an after-school cookie, you have to tell my mother about your day. When we were kids, Valerie always had lots to report. She made Glee Club. She won the spelling contest. She was chosen for the Christmas pageant. Susan Marone told her Jimmy Wisneski thought she was pretty. I had lots to report, too. I didn't make Glee Club. I didn't win the spelling contest. I wasn't chosen for the Christmas pageant. And I accidentally knocked Billy Bartolucci down the stairs, and he ripped the knee out of his pants. Grandma met me at the door.
"Just in time to have a cookie and tell us about your day," she said. "I bet it was a pip. You've got food all over you. Were you after a killer?"
"I was after a guy wanted for domestic violence."
"I hope you kicked him where it hurt."
"I didn't actually get to kick him, but I ruined his pizza." I sat down at the table with Angie and Mary Alice. "How's it going?" I asked.
"I made the Glee Club,"
Angie said. I stifled the urge to scream and took a cookie. "How about you?" I asked Mary Alice. Mary Alice took a drink of milk and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand.
"I'm not a reindeer anymore on account of I lost my antlers. They fell off on the way home from school and a dog went to the bathroom on them,"
Angie said.
"I didn't want to be a reindeer anyway,"
Mary Alice said.
"Reindeers don't got nice tails like horses."
"Do you know Annie Soder?"
"Sure,"
Mary Alice said.
"She's in my class. She's my best friend, except she's never in school lately."
"I went to see her today, but she wasn't home. Do you know where she is?"
"Nope,"
Mary Alice said.
"I guess she's gone. That happens when you get divorced."
If Annie could go anywhere she wanted, where would she go?
"Disney World."
"Where else?"
"Her grandma's."
"Where else?" Mary Alice shrugged. "How about her mom? Where would her mom want to go?" Another shrug. "Help me out here," I said. "I'm trying to find Annie."
"Annie is a horse, too,"
Mary Alice said.
"Annie is a brown horse. Only thing, she can't gallop as fast as me."
Grandma moved to the front door, driven there by Berg radar. A good Berg housewife never missed anything happening on the street. A good Berg housewife could pick up street sounds not ordinarily heard by the human ear.
"Look at this," Grandma said. "Mabel's got company. Somebody I never saw before."
My mother and I joined Grandma at the door. "Fancy car," my mother said. It was a black Jaguar, brand new. Not a splatter of mud or a speck of dust on it. A woman emerged from behind the wheel. She was dressed in black leather pants, high-heeled black leather boots, and a short, form-fitting black leather jacket. I knew who she was. I'd run into her once before. She was the female equivalent of Ranger. My understanding was that, like Ranger, she did a variety of things, including, but not limited to, bodyguarding, bounty hunting, and private investigating. Her name was Jean Ellen Burroughs. Chapter 4.
"Mabel's visitor looks like Catwoman," Grandma said, "except she hasn't got pointy cat ears and whiskers."
And the cat suit was by Donna Karen. "I know her," I said. Her name is Jean Ellen Burroughs, and she's probably connected to the child custody bond somehow. I need to talk to her.
Me too, Grandma said.
No, not a good idea. Stay here. I'll be right back. Jean Ellen saw me approach and paused on the sidewalk. I extended my hand to her. Stephanie Plum, I said. She had a firm handshake.
I remember.
I assume you've been hired by someone connected to the bond.
Steven Soder.
I've been hired by Mabel.
I hope we won't have an adversarial relationship.
That would be my hope, too, I said.
Would you like to share any information with me?
I took a beat to think about it and decided I didn't have any information to share. No. Her mouth curved into a small, polite smile.
Well, then.
Mabel opened her door and peered out at us. This is Jean Ellen Burroughs, I told Mabel. She's working for Steven Soder. She'd like to ask you some questions. I'd prefer you didn't answer them. I was getting strange vibes on Evelyn and Annie's disappearance, and I didn't want Annie given up to Steven until I heard Evelyn's reason for leaving.
It would be in your best interest to talk to me, Jean Ellen said to Mabel. Your great-granddaughter could be in danger. I could help find her. I'm very good at finding people.
Stephanie's good at finding people, too,
Mabel said. Again, the small smile returned to Jean Ellen's mouth.
I'm better, she said.
It was true. Jean Ellen was better at finding people. I relied more on dumb luck and blind persistence.
I don't know,
Mabel said.
I don't feel comfortable going against Stephanie. You look like a perfectly nice young woman, but I'd rather not talk to you about this.
Jean Ellen gave Mabel her card.
If you change your mind, you can reach me at one of these numbers.
Mabel and I watched Jean Ellen get into her car and drive off.
She reminds me of someone,
Mabel said.
I can't put my finger on it.
Catwoman, I said.
Yes, that's it, except for the ears.
I left Mabel, filled my mother and grandmother in on Jean Ellen, took a cookie for the road, and headed for home, making a fast stop at the office first. Lula pulled in behind me.
Wait until you see the boots I got. I got myself a pair of biker boots.
She tossed her bag and her jacket on the couch and opened the shoebox.
Look at this. Are these hot or what?
They were black with a high stacked heel with an eagle stitched onto the side. Connie and I agreed. The boots were hot.
So what have you been up to?
Lula asked me.
I miss anything interesting?
I ran into Jean Ellen Burroughs, I said. Connie and Lula did a double mouth drop. Jean Ellen wasn't seen a lot. She mostly worked at night and was as elusive as smoke.
Tell me, Lula said. I gotta know everything.
Steven Soder hired her to find Evelyn and Annie. Connie and Lula exchanged glances.
Does Ranger know about this?
Connie asked. There were a lot of rumors about Ranger and Jean Ellen. One rumor had them secretly living together. One rumor had them as mentor and mentee. Clearly there'd been some sort of relationship at some point, and I was pretty sure it no longer existed, although it was hard to know anything for sure with Ranger.
This is going to be good, Lula said. You and Ranger and Jean Ellen Burroughs. If I was you, I'd go home and do my hair and put some mascara on, and I'd stop at the Harley store and get a pair of these cool boots. You need a pair of these boots just in case you need to walk over Jean Ellen.
My cousin Vinny stuck his head out of his office.
Are you talking about Jean Ellen Burroughs?
Stephanie ran into her today,
Connie said.
They're working a case together from opposite sides.
Vinny grinned at me.
You're going up against Jean Ellen? Are you nuts? This isn't one of my FTAs, is it?
Child custody bond, I said. Mabel's great-granddaughter.
The Mabel next door to your parents? The old-as-dirt Mabel?
That's the one. Evelyn and Stephen got a divorce, and Evelyn took off with Annie.
So Jean Ellen is working for Soder. That makes sense. Sebring probably wrote the bond, right?
Jean Ellen works for Sebring.
Sebring can't go after Evelyn. but he can recommend that Soder hires Gene Ellen. Just the sort of case Gene Ellen would take, too. A missing kid. Gene Ellen loves to have a cause.
How do you know so much about Gene Ellen?
Everybody knows about Gene Ellen, Vinny said. She's a legend. Cripes, you're gonna get your ass kicked.
This Gene Ellen thing was starting to annoy me. Gotta go, I said. Things to do. I just stopped in to borrow a pair of cuffs. Everyone's eyebrows rose a couple inches.
You need another pair of cuffs? Vinny asked.
I gave him my PMS look. You got a problem with that?
Hell no, Vinny said. I'm gonna go with S&M. I'm gonna pretend you got a man chained up naked somewhere. It's more comforting than thinking one of my FTAs is running around with your bracelet attached.
I parked in the back of the lot, next to the dumpster, and walked the short distance to my apartment building's rear entrance. Mr. Spiga had just docked his 20-year-old Oldsmobile in one of the coveted handicapped slots, close to the door, his handicapped sign proudly affixed to his windshield. He was in his 70s, retired from his job at the button factory, and with the exception of his addiction to Metamucil, was in perfect health. Lucky for him, his wife is legally blind and lame from a hip replacement gone bad. Not that it cuts a lot of slack in this lot. Half the people in the building have poked out an eye and run over their foot to get handicapped status. In Jersey, parking is often more important than sight. Nice day, I said to Mr. Spiga. He grabbed a grocery bag from the back seat.
Have you bought ground chuck lately? Who decides these prices? How can people afford to eat? And why is the meat so red? You ever notice it's only red on the outside? They spray it with something so you think it's fresh. The food industry's gone to hell.
I opened the door for him.
Another thing, he said. Half the men in this country have breasts. I'm telling you, it's from those hormones they feed the cows. You drink the milk from the cows, and you grow breasts.
Ah, I thought. If only it was that easy. The elevator doors opened, and Mrs. Bessler peeked out.
Going up, she said.
Mrs. Bessler was about 200 years old and liked to play elevator operator. Second floor, I told her.
Second floor, ladies' handbags and better dresses,
she sang out, punching the button.
Gripes, Mr. Spiga said. This place is filled with loonies.
First thing I did when I entered my apartment was check my messages. I work with a mysterious bounty hunter guy who turns me to jelly and makes sexual innuendos and never follows through. And I'm in the off-again phase of an off-again-on-again relationship with a cop guy I think I might want to marry. Someday, but not now. That's my love life. In other words, my love life is a big zero. I can't remember the last time I had a date. An orgasm is nothing more than a distant memory. And there were no messages on my machine. I flopped onto my couch and closed my eyes. My life was in the toilet. I did about a half hour of self-pity and was about to get up and take a shower when my doorbell rang. I went to the door and looked out my security peephole. Nobody there. I turned to walk away and heard rustling on the other side of the door. I looked out again. Still no one there. I called my neighbor across the hall and asked him to look out his door and tell me if anyone was there. Okay, so this is a little despicable on my part. But no one ever wants to kill Mr. Waleski, and from time to time people want to kill me. Doesn't hurt to be careful, right?
What are you, crazy?
Mr. Waleski said.
I'm watching the Brady Bunch. You called right in the middle of the Brady Bunch.
And he hung up. I was still hearing the rustling sounds, so I got my gun out of the cookie jar, found a bullet in the bottom of my purse, put the bullet in the gun, and opened the door. There was a dark green canvas bag hanging from my doorknob. The bag had a drawstring pulled tight at the top, and something was moving in the bag. My first thought was an abandoned kitten. I removed the bag from the doorknob, opened the drawstring, and looked inside. Snakes. The bag was filled with big black snakes. I shrieked and dropped the bag on the floor, and the snakes slid out.
I jumped back into my apartment and slammed my door shut. I looked out my peephole. The snakes were scattering. Shit. I opened the door and shot a snake. Now I was out of bullets. Shit again. Mr. Walesky opened his door and looked out.
What the?
He said and slammed his door shut. I ran into my kitchen to look for more bullets, and a snake followed me in. Another shriek, and I climbed onto my kitchen counter. I was still on the counter when the police arrived. Carl Costanza and his partner, Big Dog. I'd gone to school with Carl, and we were friends in a strange, distant sort of way.
"We got a weird call from your neighbor about snakes," Carl said. "Since there's one shot to shit on your doorstep and you're up there on the counter, I suppose the call isn't a hoax."
"I ran out of bullets," I said.
"So, by a rough estimate, how many snakes do you think we got here?"
"I'm pretty sure there were four in the bag. I shot one. I saw one go down the hall. I saw one head for my bedroom. And one is God knows where."
Carl and Big Dog grinned up at me.
"Is a big bad bounty hunter afraid of snakes?"
"Just find them, okay?"
"Yeesh."
Carl adjusted his gun belt and swaggered off with Big Dog a step behind him.
"Yes, snaky, snaky, snaky," Carl crooned.
"I think we should look in her panties drawer," Big Dog said. "That's where I'd go if I was a snake."
"Pervert!" I yelled. "I don't see any snakes here," Carl said.
"They go under things and they hide in corners," I told him. "Did you check under the couch? Did you look in my closet? Under my bed?"
"I'm not looking under your bed," Carl said. "I'm afraid I'll find some knuckle-dragger hiding there."
This got a laugh out of Big Dog. I didn't think it was funny, since it was one of my constant fears.
"Listen, Steph," Carl called from the bedroom. "We really have searched everywhere, but we're not seeing any snakes. Are you sure there's one in here?"
"Yes."
"How about a closet?" Big Dog said. "Did you look in the closet?"
"The door's closed. A snake couldn't get in there."
I heard one of them pull the closet door open, and then they both started shouting.
"Jesus Christ!
Holy shit!
Shoot it! Shoot it!"
Carl yelled.
"Kill the motherfucker!"
There was a lot of gunshots and more shouting.
"We didn't get it! It's coming out!"
Carl said.
"God damn, there are two of them!"
I heard the door to my bedroom slam shut.
"Stay here and watch the door," Carl told Big Dog. "Make sure they don't come out."
Carl stormed into my kitchen and started going through my cupboards. He found a half-empty bottle of gin and drank two fingers from the bottle.
"Jesus,"
he said, capping the bottle, returning it to the cupboard shelf. "I thought you weren't supposed to drink on duty."
"Yeah, except when you find snakes in closets. I'm calling animal control."
I was still on the counter when two animal control guys arrived. Carl and Big Dog were in my living room, guns drawn, eyes trained on my bedroom door.
"They're in the bedroom,"
Carl told the animal control officers.
"Two of them."
Joe Morelli showed up a couple minutes later. Morelli wears his hair short, but always needs a cut. Today was no exception. His dark hair curled over his ears and his collar and fell onto his forehead. His eyes were melted chocolate brown. He wore jeans and running shoes and a gray-green thermal Henley. Under the shirt, his body was hard and perfect. Fortunately, at this particular moment, under the jeans, he was just perfect. Although I'd seen that part of him hard, and it was pretty damn fantastic. His gun and his badge were also under the Henley. Morelli grinned when he saw me on the counter.
"What's going on?"
"Someone left a bag of snakes on my doorknob."
"And you let them loose?"
"They took me by surprise."
He looked back at the one I'd shot, still untouched on the hall floor.
"Is that the one you shot?"
"I ran out of bullets."
"How many bullets did you start with?"
"One."
The grin widened. The animal control officers came out of the bedroom with the two snakes in a bag.
"Racers," they said. "Harmless."
One of them towed the dead snake in the hall.
"You want us to take this one too?"
"Yes," I said. "And there's another snake somewhere."
Someone screamed at the far end of the hall.
"Guess we know where to look for snake number four,"
Joe said. The animal control guys took off with the snakes, and Carl and Big Dog shuffled out of my living room into my foyer.
Guess we're done here, Carl said. You might want to check out your closet. I think Big Dog killed a pair of shoes.
Joe closed the door behind them.
You can get off the counter now.
It was scary.
Cupcake, your life is scary.
What's that supposed to mean?
Your job sucks.
It's no suckier than yours.
I don't have people leaving snakes on my doorknob.
Animal control said they were harmless. He threw his hands into the air.
You're impossible.
What are you doing here anyway? I haven't heard from you in weeks.
I heard the call go out on the radio, and I had a misguided urge to make sure you were okay. You haven't heard from me because we broke up, remember?
Yeah, but there's all kinds of broken up.
Oh, yeah?
What kind is this?
First you decide you don't want to marry me.
That was a mutual agreement.
Then you go off with Ranger.
That was work-related. He had his hands planted on his hips.
Let's get back to the snakes, okay? You have any idea who left them?
I guess I could make a list.
Jesus, he said. You've got a list. Not one or two people. A whole list. You have a whole list of people who might want to leave snakes on your doorknob.
The last couple days have been sort of busy.
Is that pizza in your hair?
I accidentally rolled on Andy Bender's lunch. He would be on the list. A guy named Martin Paulson isn't too happy with me. There's my ex-husband. Then I had an unfortunate encounter with Eddie Abruzzi.
That caught Morelli's attention. Eddie Abruzzi?
I told him about Evelyn and Annie and the Abruzzi connection.
I don't suppose you'd listen to me if I told you to stay away from Abruzzi,
Morelli said. I'm trying to stay away from Abruzzi. Morelli grabbed me by the front of my shirt, pulled me to him, and kissed me. His tongue touched mine, and I felt liquid fire slide through my stomach and head south. He released me and turned to go. Hey, I said. What was that?
Temporary insanity. You drive me nuts.
And he stalked off down the hall and disappeared into the elevator. I took a shower and dressed in clean jeans and t-shirt. I did the makeup thing this time and put some gel in my hair, sort of like locking the barn after the horses have escaped. I went into the kitchen and stared into the refrigerator for a while, but nothing materialized. No cake, no hot sausage sandwich, no macaroni and cheese magically appeared. I took a bag of chocolate chip cookies out of the freezer and ate one. You were supposed to bake them first, but that seemed like unnecessary effort. I talked to Annie's best friend, and that hadn't given me a lot. Okay, so what would I do if I needed to protect my daughter from her father? Where would I go? I wouldn't have a lot of money, so I'd need to rely on a friend or relative. I'd need to go far enough that my car wouldn't be recognized, and I wouldn't run the risk of bumping into Soder or one of his friends. This narrowed the search down to the entire world, except for the Berg. I was contemplating the world when my doorbell rang. I wasn't expecting anyone, and I'd just received a bag of snakes, so I wasn't all that crazy about answering the door. I looked out my peephole and grimaced. It was Albert Clown. But wait a minute. He was holding a pizza box. Hello. I opened the door and gave a quick look up and down the hall. I was pretty sure there'd been four snakes in the bag. Still, doesn't hurt to keep your eyes open for renegade reptiles.
Hope I'm not disturbing anything,
Clown said, stretching his neck out to look around me into my apartment.
You aren't entertaining or anything, are you? I didn't know if you were living with anyone.
What's up?
I've been thinking about the Soder case, and I have some ideas. I thought we could, like, brainstorm.
I looked down at the box he was holding.
I brought a pizza, he said. I didn't know if you'd eaten yet. Do you like pizza? If you don't like pizza, I could get something else. I could get Mexican or Chinese or Thai.
Please, Lord, tell me this isn't a date. I'm sort of engaged. He vigorously nodded his head, up and down, like one of those dogs people put in their back car windows.
Absolutely. I knew you would be. Understood. I'm almost engaged, too. I have a girlfriend.
Really? He took a deep breath.
No, I just made that up.
I took the pizza box from him and dragged him into my apartment. I got some napkins and a couple beers, and we sat at my small dining room table and ate pizza. What are these ideas you have about Evelyn Soder?
I figure she's with a friend, right? So, she had to get in touch with the friend somehow. She had to tell her she was coming to stay. I figure she did this on the phone. So what we need is a phone bill.
And?
That's it.
Good thing you brought a pizza.
Actually, it's a tomato pie. In the Berg, they call it a tomato pie.
Sometimes. You know anyone at the phone company? Anyone in the billing department?
I figured you'd have the contacts. See, that's why we're such a good team. I have the ideas, and you have the contacts. Bounty hunters have contacts, right?
Right. Unfortunately, not in the phone company. We finished the pizza, and I brought out the bag of frozen cookies for dessert.
I heard you get cancer from eating raw cookie dough,
Clown said.
Don't you think you should bake this?
I ate a bag of raw dough a week. I considered it to be one of the four major food groups. I always eat raw cookie dough, I said.
Me too, Clown said. I eat raw cookie dough all the time. I don't believe that stuff about the cancer.
He looked into the bag and tentatively took out a frozen lump of dough.
So, what do you do here? Do you, like, nibble on it? Or do you put it all in your mouth at once?
You've never had raw cookie dough, have you?
No.
He took a bite and chewed.
I like it, he said. Very good.
I glanced down at my watch. You're going to have to go now. I have some unfinished business to take care of.
Is it bounty hunter business? You can tell me. I won't tell anybody, I swear. What are you doing? I bet you're going after someone. You were waiting for nighttime, right?
Right.
So, who are you going after? Is it anyone I know? Is it like a high-profile case? A killer?
It's no one you know. It's domestic abuse. A repeat offender. I'm waiting until he passes out in a drunken stupor, and then I'm going to capture him when he's unconscious.
I could help you...
No!
You didn't let me finish. I could help you drag him to the car. How are you going to get him to the car? You're going to need help, right?
Lula will help me.
Lula has class tonight. Remember she said she had to go to school tonight? Do you have anyone else who helps you? I bet you don't have anyone else, right?
I was getting an eye twitch. Tiny, annoying muscle contractions below my right lower lid. Okay, I said. You can come with me, but you can't talk. No talking.
Sure, no talking. My lips are sealed. Look at me. I'm locking my lips and throwing the key away.
I parked half a block from Andy Bender's apartment, positioning my car between pools of light thrown by overhead halogens. Traffic was minimal. Bender's had closed up shop for the day, switching to nighttime pursuits of hijacking and shoplifting. Residents were locked behind closed doors, beer